Blog Talk Radio.
I guess the goat's out wandering around somewhere, maybe cleaning the grounds of Poison Ivy, for all I know. Good evening and welcome to Eerie House, Oldie Timey Radio. I am Dale Kay, and I'm from Spook Show, accompanied by...
Dave Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And I have to tell you, Dale, I did a lot of highly, painfully, painstakingly research that I made up to once again bring us another tale of the greatest inventor of all time, Ugg the Caveman.
Ugg will be returning tonight?
Yes.
Awesome.
He's back tonight.
Fortunately, I have his theme music all prepared. Well, thanks for the heads up, and giving our listeners, wherever they might be, a heads up as well. It's a beautiful day out. I'm sure people are thinking about, you know, maybe we'll catch them in the archive this time. Who knows? Blog Talk.
Pretty
you could always blame them.
Yes. But, and you know, Dale, we've got a brand new show, a brand new old show tonight, one we've never featured here before on Eerie House.
A brand new,
Midnight.
Never before heard repeat,
yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. No, we've never shared an episode of Midnight. I found along the web there, a series of 13 from 1982, and this is
Ooh.
One of them.
Ooh! So not only do we have Midnight tonight, we have Murder at Midnight.
Yeah.
None
yeah.
of this, by the way, will take place at midnight. And
no,
a haunting.
No,
hour.
It's past my bedtime.
Yeah, me too. Way past.
That's almost time for you to get up, buddy.
Yeah, for my first pee of the evening. But in any event, there's more information than you cared for.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Well, I got to hand it to you with our topic today, Dave.
Well, I got it from a secondhand store.
Yes. Well, you put your finger on the pulse of our listeners. Hey, Fogsbane. Hi. Welcome to the chat. Welcome to the live chat.
Yep. So we all kinds of some radio, three radio shows. One is a nude Eerie House, and of course another visit from the greatest inventor of all time, Ugg the Caveman.
Yeah, Ugg's going to be returning. So stick around for his latest. Greatest invention.
Yep. A lot of big, painstaking research I had to make up for this one. I'm telling you.
Oh. Well, Dave, thanks for bringing, making sure that Ugg will be here tonight. I appreciate all the legwork you do in reaching out to him across the decades, centuries.
The eons.
Eons. Yeah, and that's more than a lot. But
got a lot of zeros.
More than a couple. Yep.
A lot of zeros.
But so we've got. I wasn't sure how it was going to be. Got to find these nasty hand shows. You know.
Yeah.
I think some of them are so bad that people never washed their hands. That's how bad some
know.
Of the shows are.
Well, hands have been used in like suspenseful and like horror films. You've got, of course, the hands of Orlac,
mm-hmm.
Conrad Veidt, the violent version, later remade as Mad Love with Peter Lorre.
Wait. You can't say Peter Lorre. You must say Peter Lorre. That's what you want. You can't ever say just Peter Lorre. Yes.
I don't know why you want me to say it a certain way, Dave. When you ask me to do that, it makes me crazy. I want to eat brains and poke out my eye sockets until they bulge and look at.
Okay, never mind. you got the crawling hand, and you got the hands have been used. Look at how Lugosi used his in various ways, in both White Zombie and as Dracula.
Yep, and then. And, you know, even in Radio Suspense, one of our favorites with Vincent Price and Visible Man. I forget what his name is. anyway, they did The Hands of Mr. Moto, which is a favorite suspense of ours, you know.
Yep.
Strangulation, yes. Yeah, couldn't strangulate somebody without a pair of hands.
Yep. And sometimes you got amputated hands coming after you and all kinds of stuff in motion pictures. But tonight we got some radio for you where the topic is hands.
Yep, yep.
We're not promising, but we're not denying any severed body parts. But we'll see what happens. If we're lucky, maybe a few.
Yeah. So don't put it in the mail. It might be a little illegal. You know, don't do that.
Yeah. Didn't they send, in The Godfather, didn't they send one of his henchmen's arms or something? That's his way of saying Luca Brasi sleeps with the fishes? I don't know.
Various body parts. A lot of times during the kidnappings, they'll send a finger.
Yeah. Yep, just to let you know, we got the rest of him. Just you want it. Here's the price tag. See you soon. Love, Dale. I mean, criminal.
Yeah, got to be careful with that.
Always, you know, sign out on your ransom letters with love. I think that's impactful. You'll move the recipient, perhaps, to pay the exorbitant fee that you're trying to get from them.
Right. And if you'd sign it that way, they might not call the police.
Yes. That's right. This is part of our how-to crime series. God. Gar, come back. We need you. Dale's getting desperate. On the comedy level.
Crime series. Yep.
He's resorting to morbid stuff. Give you the heebie-jeebies. Where shall we start tonight, Dave?
It would be up to you. Why don't we save the new one for a little bit later, just in case we get a few stragglers that come in.
We could do that.
Why don't we start with the haunting hour, which is usually not too haunting, but might be tonight. You never know when it's got.
Never know.
You never know. They're usually more of a mystery than a haunting, and they're not an hour, they're a half hour. So it's the haunting half hour that isn't always very haunting.
And never at midnight.
How's that?
At midnight. So an intriguing title, The Hands of Mr. Smith.
Sounds like an alias to me.
Yeah, it could be. Come on, what's your name? Smith, really? This one was originally
Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Renting this room by the hour, I see. Hands of Mr. Smith, originally broadcast.
Episode number 9 coming to us from June 23rd of 1940 and 5.
Number 9.
The Haunting Hour.
No. No, stay where you are.
Don't need new batteries.
Do not break the stillness of this moment. For this is a time of mystery. A time when imagination is free and moves forward silently, swiftly. This is the Haunting Hour. The Hand of Mr. Smith. Midnight. An alleyway. Dark. Ominously quiet in the dimly lighted factory district on the outskirts of a big city. In the black shadows, two men wait, their hats pulled down over their eyes, their hands tense in their overcoat pockets. Suddenly, one of the men leans forward in the velvet darkness to peer down the deserted street.
I don't see him, Russ. He'll be along. I can hardly wait to get my hands on that dough.
Yeah.
Hey, look, Russ. My hands. The way they're shaking.
Take it easy, Tiny.
It's funny. Every time I'm waiting to stick up a guy, my mitts get shaking like this.
You keep them paws under control.
Oh, sure, sure.
I'm not kidding.
Oh, I won't do nothing. I won't touch the guy.
Remember that.
But why don't he come, Russ?
Get back here.
But where is he? I can see the factory door, but he ain't come out yet.
Get back here, I said.
Okay, okay, okay. A car's coming.
Cop.
Huh?
Police car.
A couple of lousy cops.
Shut up.
Well, maybe they'll spot our car. Maybe they'll stop and start looking around.
I said shut up.
Oh, look, they're going by. They ain't stopping.
Stand still.
They turned the corner.
Oh, that's better.
Gee, now my hands are shaking worse than ever.
I told you to keep them big paws quiet.
Don't try and do, Russ. A guy can't do more than that.
Don't do it. When this cashier comes along, keep your hands in your pocket, and you won't be tempted.
I'll remember. I won't touch him, Russ.
Here he comes.
Are you sure?
That's him. He's all alone. He just came out of the factory.
He's carrying something.
A paper bag. He's got the dough in a paper bag.
This is one trip to the bank he ain't never going to finish.
Steady now. Okay, mister, get him up.
Well, who are you? Get him up, the man said.
Take the bag, Tiny.
Don't shoot. I won't yell. He won't yell, he said.
Take that bag, Tiny, you sap.
I don't like this guy.
Keep your hands down, Tiny.
Give me that bag.
I said I would.
How much is in here?
$3,000.
$3,000? Listen, you punk.
Stop. Go of me. Cut it out, Tiny.
But only $3,000, he said.
Stop. He's joking.
I don't like you.
Go at him, Tiny.
But I don't like him. He looks like that guard at the big house.
Give the money.
Yeah, and I'm giving you some.
Stop, Tiny. Let's go or I'll knock you cold.
Yeah, this guy won't stand still.
Stop him.
Let go.
Okay.
Okay. I'll let him go.
You killed him.
Huh?
You killed him, you sap. He's dead.
But he looked just like that guard that slugged me.
Get in the car.
They're going to leave him here?
Get in the car, I said.
Where's the door?
I got it. Get in. Move.
Address him laying there. Suppose them cops come back.
Shut the door. We're getting out of here.
Hey, Russ, where are we going? This ain't the way the apartment.
We're not going to the apartment.
Well, why not? I told Claire I'd bring the money home tonight.
Keep watching that rearview mirror.
There ain't no cops on our trail. But where are we going,
Russ? We're ditching this car, you dope.
Oh, yeah. Sure, we don't need this hot jalopy no more tonight.
I thought I told you to keep your hands off that cashier.
Oh, now listen, Russ.
We had
this
stick up in the bag, but you had to go and scrag the guy.
I didn't mean to kill him, but there was something about him. Once I got my mitts on his throat.
I know, you can't make those big paws behave.
I'm sorry, Russ.
I had my rod on him. All you had to do was take the bag, get in the car while I knocked him cold, and we had smooth sailing.
I said I was sorry, Russ.
You're always sorry.
But look. Look, we got the $3,000, didn't we? We're in the clear. Nobody saw us. Nobody heard us.
What do you mean, us? I didn't kill him.
Hey.
What's the matter?
Back there. I think a prowl car just turned the corner.
Well, is it?
No. That ain't no prowl car. Just a black sedan like this one. They pulled up the curb.
We'll turn off at the next corner, brain.
Plenty deserted around here. Why don't we stop here?
Go on a little further along where it's darker.
Yeah, Claire's going to wonder what's happened. I said I'd be at the apartment by 12:30.
Claire will know soon enough.
Yeah. Wait till I show her the $3,000 we got.
Wait till she hears about the murder.
Oh, I won't tell her tonight.
No, she can read it in the morning papers.
Yeah. Hey, you know, we're getting kind of far out of town. When are we going to stop?
Right here. I'll pull off the road. Okay, we'll leave her here.
Yeah, that's a good spot. Not even a house in sight.
Give me your gun, Tiny.
My gun?
Your gat. Give it to me.
Well, but what for?
To keep you out of trouble.
Now listen, Russ.
Now, we're leaving this car. We're walking to the nearest bus line. If there's a cop on the bus and he looks at you twice, you're going to start shooting, so hand over your rod.
Okay, here it is.
That's better. And now, Tiny, give me the money.
Huh?
The paper bag with the money. Hand it over.
What is this?
Give me the money, Tiny.
Oh, sure. Here it is. Come on, now let's get out of this car.
Sit still.
Yeah?
You're staying here.
Where? Hey, wait a minute.
Keep those hands quiet.
Hey, Russ, watch that gun. You're pointing it right at me.
You said it. I'm washed up with you, and so is Claire.
What? Claire?
Yeah, Claire, your wife. She's fed up to the teeth, so am I.
You and Claire? Oh, so that's why you didn't drive the apartment. That's why you came way out here. You and Claire are crossing me up. You're figuring I'm bumping me off?
That's right.
Give me that gun.
You bet I will.
Oh, Rush, I'll get you for this. I'll get Claire and you if I have to dig my way out of my own grave.
Beat it, Russ. We gotta pack up and beat it out of here tonight.
What? At 2 o'clock in the morning? Not on your life. We're staying here until this whole thing blows over.
But that cashier. Maybe the cops have found him already. They're bound to find him soon. They're bound to find Tiny.
What of it, Claire? They can't connect it up with you and me.
I'm scared, Russ. Suppose Tiny wasn't dead. Suppose he drove the car back here to the apartment somehow.
You must believe in ghosts.
He said he'd get us, didn't he? He said he'd get us if he had to dig his way out of his own grave.
Oh, I shouldn't have told you that.
Come on. Let's get out of here.
Nothing doing, Claire. We're staying right here. Come on, baby. Unlock the trunk.
The
trunk? Sure. We'll hide the dough in your trunk until this whole thing blows over. Come on, honey. Unlock it.
It is unlocked.
Uh-huh. This lid is kind of rusty, huh? Here we are. I'll shove this $3,000 under all these clothes.
Those are Tiny's clothes.
Oh, come on. Relax, Claire. Now let me lock it.
Hey!
What's the matter?
You've locked the trunk.
Oh, sure.
But Tiny has the only key. He always carries it with him.
What about it? We'll get another one. I'll have a new one made tomorrow.
What was that?
Sounded like glass breaking.
It was here in the apartment somewhere.
Maybe it wasn't.
I'm sure it was. Sounded like it came from the bathroom.
Well, let's find out.
Wait a minute.
What for?
Have your gun ready.
My gun?
That window in the bathroom. Maybe Tiny climbed up the fire.
Oh, will you forget Tiny? He's dead, I tell you. Come on. Let's find out what that noise was. There, you see? There's no one in the bathroom.
The window's open. I closed it and locked it tonight before you and Tiny left.
Oh, now listen, Claire.
Look. Look, there on the windowsill.
What's the matter now?
Blood. Blood on the windowsill. Yeah. And here, on the floor, more of it. I tell you, Tiny did come back. He drove that car back here, climbed the fire escape, and he's hiding here in the apartment waiting to kill us.
Quiet, Claire, quiet.
I'm getting out of here.
No, no, you're not. We'll go flying down the street at this time of night. Some cop will pick you up as sure as my name's Rogers.
But that blood on the sill, on the floor, the window open.
Oh, wait a second. Oh, this stuff on the floor, this isn't blood?
Of course it's blood.
No, Claire, you're wrong. Look, 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 there, under the bathtub.
What is it?
A bottle. A little bottle of that stuff you paint your nails with.
I kept that bottle on the windowsill.
All right, okay. So the wind, something blew it off. That's what we heard. This bottle breaking. That's what made those spots in here.
Listen.
Police car.
Sounded like it. Stopped in front of the building.
Come on out. Come on, what is it?
Suppose they followed Tiny here. Suppose he drove the car back here.
Will you stop talking about Tiny? Put out the lights.
What for?
Put out the lights, Claire.
All right.
Now, peek under this window shade and see where that police car is.
Are they out front?
Yeah. Yeah, they are. Two cops in front of the building.
What are they doing?
They're looking at a car.
What car?
A black sedan parked in front of the building.
You said the car you used tonight was a black sedan.
All right. There's a million black sedans in this country, Mike.
But why are the cops looking at the one out front? Why are they putting their flashlights on the running board? Why are they looking inside?
How do I know?
Because Tiny drove it here. He isn't dead. You didn't kill him. He drove that car back here, climbed the fire escape, and he's in the apartment somewhere waiting to get it. Somebody at the door.
Shh.
So what are you going to do?
Open up!
Mr. Smith, we want in.
Just a minute, I'm coming. folks are heavy sleepers.
What's the matter, officer?
There's a black sedan parked in front of the building with a lot of blood on the running board.
Blood?
Yeah. All over the running board and a lot more inside.
Well, what's it got to do with us? We don't own a car.
You don't, huh?
No.
Maybe you know whose car it is, then. Take a look out the window.
I already did.
I thought you just got out of bed.
I did. I heard the siren out front, came in the living room, and looked out the window. I went back to put on some clothes to go downstairs and find out what it was all about.
Who owns that car out front?
I don't know. I never saw it in my life before.
Hmm. Where's the janitor this joint?
Janitor? Oh, right.
Mr. Monk's and his wife live in the basement.
There's nobody home.
Sometimes the monks stay overnight with Mrs. Monk's sister. She lives over in Glendale somewhere.
Do the monks own a car?
Not that I know of.
Hmm. Who lives in the apartment above this one?
Let's see.
An old bachelor. A man named Weaver.
Maybe that black sedan belongs to him.
We wouldn't know.
Okay, folks. Sorry to get you out of bed at this time in the morning.
That's all right, officer.
I'll go up and talk to this Weaver guy.
Maybe that stuff on the running board ain't blood, eh?
It's blood, all right. Good night.
Good night, officer.
Tiny.
Now listen, Claire.
Tiny didn't die. He drove the car back here.
Oh, I tell you, you're nuts. Tiny's dead. That car in front of the building only looks like the one I used tonight.
Then how do you explain the blood on the running board? How do you explain the blood inside?
I can't explain it.
I can, because it's the car you shot Tiny in. He came back here. He's hiding in the apartment somewhere waiting to kill us. He said he'd dig his way out of his own grave to get us.
Oh, what a sap I was to tell you that.
Let's get away, Russ. Let's beat it out of here.
And leave that $3,000 locked in the trunk?
Why did you have to lock that trunk? I told you Tiny had the only key.
And I told you I'd have another key made in the morning. I heard it.
Somebody's out in the kitchen.
Oh, don't be a sap. There's no one in this apartment but you and me.
Then what was that noise?
I don't know. Probably the cat knocked over something on the kitchen table.
There it is again. I tell you Tiny's here.
Tiny's dead. He's dead, do you hear me? In that car, 2 miles away.
Wait. Where are you going?
I'm going out in the kitchen.
Don't leave me alone.
I'm not leaving you alone. You're coming with me. Maybe you believe in ghosts. I don't. Come on.
Look. Look, in the bedroom.
Oh, it can't be. That's impossible.
I knew it. I knew he'd come back.
But it can't be. It can't be Tiny. We're seeing things.
Why doesn't he say something? Why doesn't he do something? Why does he just lie there on the bed?
I'm going in the bedroom.
No. Don't go near.
I'm going to get the key to that trunk.
Don't touch him. Don't go near.
But Tiny has the key. You told me I got to get it out of his pocket. We'll get the money and beat it.
He's breathing. I can't look at them.
All right. Steady now. I'll slip my hand in his pocket. I got it. Got the key.
Hello, Russ.
Let go of my wrist.
I said I'd come back, Russ.
Let go of my wrist.
Drop the key.
Claire. Claire, get the gun out of my back pocket.
A gun won't help you, Russ. You ought to know that now.
You're breaking my wrist.
Then drop the key on the bed.
Okay. I dropped it.
That's my pal. Claire.
Don't come near him, Claire.
Take the key, Claire.
Don't come near him, I tell you.
Pick up the key. Come around on the other side of the bed and get it.
Yes, Tiny.
You've always been a good wife, Claire. Take the key. The money we got tonight belongs to you.
Tiny, with this money, we can all get away.
Sure we can. Pick up the key. Don't be afraid.
All right. I will.
Now.
Stop! Let go of me!
Now we're all together again.
Your hand is breaking my wrist.
We're all together again. You and me and Russ.
Russ, why don't you do something?
Yeah, Russ. Why don't you do something?
I can't even move.
These big hands of mine, they're better than a gun. They can hold you two here. Maybe forever.
Will he hold them forever? Stay tuned and find out.
New batteries.
That goat is stronger than ever. Doing his or her. Is it a boy goat or a girl goat? I never asked.
If it's a boy goat, we try to milk it. That's how he screams.
More than I wanted to know. All right. I withdraw the question.
Too late. Too late.
So it sounds like the young lady is keeping a cooler head about this crime than the young man.
Yeah, it does seem that way. Although she's pretty excited about it because she keeps saying he's not dead, he's not dead, he's not dead.
Well, yeah, she worried about it more at first, but now he's losing it. And they may lose it. Their lives, that is. If the dead, not dead guy. I wonder if they're going to explain clearly how he evaded death.
Or did he? I think
or
it's because of his big hands. I think it's
out.
Because of his big hands, yes.
Yes. The hands of Mr. Smith, I would think.
Yes, yes.
But, yes.
I would presume.
I presume. You presume correctly. I'm sure. Been a crazy week in real life world for Dave and I, and I can't tell you how much. This is a great chance to connect with you folks, share these great radio programs, and for us to wind down and have a great weekend.
Yes, absolutely. It's a good time to just really leave the week behind.
Yep.
And get a hand up on things this weekend, yeah.
Yeah. Indulge ourselves in these old tales. And we want to make time for Uglater, so let's wrap up. The Hands of Mr. Smith from Haunting Hour.
Excuse me, Mr. Farquhar, but your new aircraft carrier has arrived.
What? Oh, put it over there next to the others, will you? Oh, and Jives, get me a Manhattan.
The city or the drink, sir?
Good one, Jives.
Wow, Mr. Farquhar, how did you ever get so rich?
Actually, it all started at the University of Guelph.
Welcome, class of 72, University of Guelph.
I have to do what to this fish?
Fairchild, A. Farquhar, C.
No, Judy, I gotta study tonight. Judy, no. And don't call me Farty.
Farquhar, A+. Congratulations. You have been awarded the scholarship in marine biology.
I have to do what to this mermaid? So, after graduating, I went into animal management. Flipper, Morris the cat, all my clients. I owe everything to the University of Guelph.
You could owe it all to the University of Guelph.
Oh, Sparky.
Frank Platier introduces the 349 all-you-can-eat pizza. All the deep-dish pizza you can eat as fast as you want to eat it. Fresh out of Frank Platier's deep little pizza oven. No more waiting endless minutes for your pizza. You can have endless pizza in minutes. With pepperoni, mushrooms, peppers, deep dish the way you like it. Frank Platier's 349 all-you-can-eat pizza. $1.99 for kids under 12. 4 to 10 p.m. limited time special. At participating Frank Platier's restaurants.
And now the conclusion of The Haunting Hour on 104 Chum FM.
Go on, Monk. Push the buzzer again.
Dora, it's only 8 o'clock in the morning. The Smiths don't get up this early.
We'll get him up. I'm going to find out about this.
I'm going back downstairs and finish my breakfast.
You are not. You're the janitor of this building, and you're supposed to know what's going on with the tenants.
That don't mean I got to wake him up and ask him foolish questions.
I want to know if the man we heard about on the radio is our Mr. Smith.
It can't be.
How do you know? Go on, push the button.
We've had enough trouble last night over to your sister's house. Why go looking for more?
This ain't looking for trouble. If it was him, we got to know sooner or later, and I want to know now.
I sure got to be mad.
I want to know, that's all. You never can tell the tenants. Who'd think that mild old Mr. Weaver was the kind to go out hunting wild animals?
That's different.
All right. Stop the buzzer, Monk. You've buzzed long enough to wake the dead.
For crying out loud, Dora. This is a fine way to start the day. I haven't...
Try
even...
the door.
I haven't...
The door, Monk. Go on, try it. Maybe it's unlocked.
All right. Hey. It is unlocked.
Well, go on, open it. Go on in.
Hey, I got the lights in the living room all turned on.
Why, sure there's something wrong with them snakes.
For crying out loud. Do you see what I see, Dora?
Money. It's money lying all over the floor.
They must have been storing that money in that trunk. Look, it's open.
Some money inside of it, too.
Well, the Schmidts never had so much money.
As far as we knew. Ah, there was always something fishy about them Schmidts. And their friend, too, Mr. Rogers.
Yeah. Hey, what are we going to do? There's someone in the bedroom. It don't sound like Mr. Smith.
No. No, that's not Mr. Smith.
Well, come on, let's get out of here.
Are you crazy? We're going to find out what's the matter here. We're going into that bedroom.
Now, be careful, Dora. There's no telling who it is.
Wait. Don't go no further.
Wait. It's Mr. Rogers.
Yes. What in the world happened to him?
Listen. Listen to what he's saying.
Mr. Wheeler's car outside with all the blood on it. You'd better tell that old gent that he's scaring the other tenants. None of our business if he wants to go off shooting wild animals. But to bring them home dripping blood, it's enough to scare the wits out of anyone.
Now, Mr. Rogers, that was deer blood. Mr. Weaver's upstairs went hunting yesterday.
No, make them let me go. Make them take the cuffs off.
Cuffs?
Tiny did it. He clamped me to the bed.
You're not clamped to the bed, Mr. Rogers. Your sleeve's caught in the rod at the edge of the bed.
Monks, look at his hair. He didn't have white hair when he was here yesterday.
What happened, Mr. Rogers? What happened to you?
Tiny did it. He put his hands around her throat. Tiny did it.
He's out of his head.
Dora, it's true. On the other side of the bed, Mrs. Smith. She's on the floor.
Well, maybe she's fainted.
No, there's marks on her neck. Say, Roger, cut the act. Maybe you killed her.
Tiny did it. With his hands on her throat, make him get off the bed. Make him get off the bed and open these cups. Make him get off the bed.
There's no one on the bed, Mr. Rogers.
Don't lie to me. I can see him. He's right in front of me lying on the bed.
But, Mr. Rogers, the bed's empty. The spread hasn't even a wrinkle.
But I see him. It's Tiny, I tell you.
It couldn't be, Mr. Smith. Even if something was there, it couldn't be Mr. Smith.
It couldn't?
No, he was killed. Police found him with four bullets in him. He was in a black sedan, they said. We heard it on the radio this morning. They found him dead about 2 miles from here.
Yes, they described him on the radio, too. And we knew it was Mr. Smith. Died about 12:30 last night.
Yeah, they said he had big hands. Like Mr. Smith.
But the funny thing is, he had a key in his hand.
A key?
Yes, Mr. Rogers, a trunk key. A little trunk key in one of his great big hands.
From shadows and stillness, mystery weaves a spell of strangest fascination in the haunting hour.
This is 104 CHUM FM's Theater of the Mind. We'll continue tonight's show in just a minute with The Mysterious Traveler.
CHUM FM?
Other major jewelry retailers may boast about exceptional quality. Others may boast about excellent selection, but there's one thing that sets the jewelry boutique apart, and that's their low, low prices. Whether you're interested in precious pearls, dazzling diamonds, or glittering crystal tableware, you'll find exactly what you're looking for at the jewelry boutique. Why pay more for a comparable piece of jewelry someplace else? Shop the jewelry boutique at Consumers Distributing, where you pay for the diamond, not for where you...
Well... That was an abrupt end of that commercial. Hey, good old Bob joining
well,
us
maybe
here.
I don't want a diamond. I don't want a diamond anyway.
No? What do you want?
No.
What would you like? What would you prefer?
Ice cream. Ice cream would be nice.
Ice cream. Mm, if I had ice cream with enough diamonds.
Yeah, but what if it's a hot diamond? Then I just end up in jail trying to trade it for ice cream. People think I'm nuts or it's stolen, one or the other.
Technicalities. But an exciting tale from the hunting hour. That last part was a bit brief, but that's okay. We got time for Ugg a little later on. That's right. If you're just joining us, Bob is. Ugg will be joining us later on today with one of his inventions.
Yep. One of those great inventions that only Ugg can bring us.
Yep. So where would civilization be without Ugg and his grand, grand creations?
We'd be really far behind, that's for sure.
Yep. Yep, we've come a long way, baby. Virginia Slims commercial. Anyway, let's save the new one for last. Let's keep people in suspense. We do have an episode from a program we've never aired before on Erie House. That's coming up later. Yeah. But next up would be Murder at Midnight.
Murder at Midnight. Yeah.
Got to have the echo
effect. Interesting set of tales. Yeah. Murder at Midnight. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. That works.
Watch it. Scare the goat. Scare the goat.
I love
it. And that goat doesn't scare easily.
Not
a goat
literally.
Doesn't scare easily.
Oh, no. I thought maybe he found the rose bush out there while he was nibbling up all the poison ivy. But yeah, that's why he's screaming. Found the rose bush. Ah!
Crazy.
Murder at Midnight. Great tale title. The Dead Hand.
The Dead Hand, yeah.
Yeah. Or the Dead Hand. Dead Hand.
What can you say? But it's a dead hand. But is it dead?
Or is it just one of those things where you fell asleep on your hand and the hand went dead?
Oh, yeah. Isn't that terrible when your hand goes numb and you wake up and just nothing but tingly?
Yeah, you're not even sure it's your own hand at one point, you know, because it's just throbbing and weird and not good.
Yeah. Not good.
See all the things you look forward to when you get old? Jilly. But we got a whole lot of radio, a whole lot of Ugg. Let's go ahead and start with The Dead Hand, originally broadcast way back.
Episode number one, and all I can tell you, it is from 1945.
Wait, come back here.
Wait, nothing. I said you were nuts, crazy. And no, don't.
I'm sorry, Ugg. Very sorry. But I had to have it. I'm going to have it.
And once you're dead, you'll never miss it. Midnight. The witching hour when the night is darkest. Our fears the strongest. And our strength at its lowest ebb, midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in The Dead Hand. And now, Murder at Midnight. Tales of terror and retribution by one of radio's best-known mystery writers, Robert Newman. Its title, The Dead Hand. The small studio cottage on Dr. Martin Trent's estate. Seated at the piano, alone in the gathering darkness, is Roger Blaine, the famous pianist, and playing as only he can play.
Never resist. With my music, making your heart beat faster, your breath come quicker. Lorna.
Hello, Roger. Am I disturbing you?
Always, Lorna.
Martin's out at the hospital, and I heard you playing. So...
That's not why you came, Lorna. You came because I called you. Because you promised you'd come and give me your answer.
What we talked about last night, my going away with you? Roger, I must have been mad. I don't know what got into me.
Don't you, Lorna? This is what got into you. My music. Telling you things I never could tell you in words.
Roger, stop. I can't think when you play like that. I can't leave him. He's my husband. I love him. Respect him.
Can you love a surgical instrument? Can you compare what you feel towards him with what you feel to... Now, this minute...
No, it is different. Roger, how can we? He's your friend. It was he that brought you here, gave you the cottage.
And haven't I given him anything? Music like this. Music such as no one has ever heard before.
Roger,
Lorna, listen to me. It's what I'm saying here. I love you. I need you. It was you who helped me find depths within myself I never knew existed. You've got to come away with me. You owe it to me, to yourself, to the world.
Roger,
you
please.
You want to. You know you want to. And you're going to.
Roger, no, I can't. I tell you,
you are. You are.
All right.
Lorna.
We can talk to Martin when he gets home tonight. Tell him. I think he...
No, Lorna, there'll be no talking, no explaining. My car's outside and we're leaving right now. The music, my music, was still with me as we drove out through the gates, down the highway, pulsing, throbbing. Yes, I could hear it, but could Lorna? I glanced at her sitting there beside me. Happy, dearest?
What? I don't know, Roger.
You don't know? Don't you realize what this means, Lorna? I'm playing better than I ever played before, and this is only the beginning. After my New York concert, South America, then Europe.
Roger, are you sure you love me? Me as a person?
My sure. Oh, what do you mean, Lorna?
I know you've said you do, but whenever you've talked about it, Roger, about us, you've talked in terms of your music. Roger, are you sure that's not what you love?
Well, of course I'm sure. If I didn't have my music, if I couldn't play... I don't think I could live.
I
it
know.
It was you. You who lifted me to heights I never dreamed of, technically, emotionally.
Roger, stop the car. Turn around. Take me back.
What?
Take me back.
I don't understand.
I do, for the first time. With Martin away so much, I was lonely, flattered by your attention. And your music was like a drug, keeping me from thinking. But now I can think. And I know you don't love me, and I don't love you. So, please, Roger, take me back.
No.
But, Roger, can't you see? This whole thing was a mistake.
It was not a mistake, and I won't take you back.
Well, I'm going back, whether you take me or not, and if you won't stop the car,
Lorna,
I...
Lorna, no, let go of that brake.
I
let go of that brake. That's it. Look out. We're going to... No! When I opened my eyes, I was in a bare white room in a hospital. Standing next to the bed were Lorna and Martin.
Hello, Roger. How are you feeling?
Well, I don't know what happened.
You were out driving with Lorna. The car got out of control and you had a smash-up. They rushed you here to the hospital and...
Smash
well,
up.
You've been here for 2 days.
Smash-up? Yes, I remember. Are you all right, Lorna?
Yes, Roger, I was shaken up. Cut a little bit.
My hand hurts. Especially the fingers. Nothing... happened to it, did it, Martin? I've got a concert in a few weeks, you know.
Roger, don't stop it.
What? Why are you looking at me like that? Oh, I...
Don't worry about it, Roger. Not now.
Well, I've got to know. I've got to...
Roger, please. Gone. Gone. My hand. My left hand. Martin, what did you do to me?
Roger, I think you know how I feel about you, about your music. You've got to believe me when I tell you there was nothing I could do about it. Nothing. It was your hand or your life.
My life? And what is my life without my music? Nothing. Worse than nothing. A living death. Why didn't you let me die?
Don't say that, Roger. We'll do anything we can. There must be something.
Something. There's just one thing. You've got to get me another hand.
We will, Roger. There have been some wonderful developments in prosthetics as a result of the war.
No, I don't mean an artificial hand. I mean a real hand.
What? Roger, you're mad.
No, I'm not. You took my hand and you'll get me another one.
We'll talk about it some other time.
You think I'll forget about it, don't you? Don't you? Oh, I won't. I say I'm going to have another hand and I will have one. And what's more, you're going to help me get it. You're here. You're going to help me.
I was able to get up and around a few days later. I didn't talk to anyone if I could help it. Because somehow I couldn't ever look at their faces. Only their hands. Big hands and little ones. Long-fingered ones and stubby ones. Yes. They each had two hands. And I, to whom my piano meant more than life, had only one. Then, sitting alone one evening, I met Hook. I looked up, and there he was, a small, slight, sharp-featured man.
Hello. Nice evening.
Yes, I suppose it is.
You mind if I sit down for a couple of minutes?
No.
I wouldn't usually bust in on anybody, except... Well, I'm getting out of here tomorrow, and I feel pretty good about it.
Oh? What was wrong with you?
Bad heart. I'm going to have to take it easy from now on. It's going to make it kind of tough in some ways, but... You don't happen to have a cigarette on you, do you?
Well, yes, I do have. It's there. Well, at least I did have. Silver cigarette case. Can't see...
Is,
Fine.
This it?
What? Oh, yeah. Where did you find it?
In your pocket.
You mean you took it?
My name's Harris, Joe Harris. You usually call me the Hook. This is my racket.
You're a pickpocket.
Well, one of the best in the business. But now with my ticket going bad, I guess I'll have to lay off, except like now for a gag. You didn't mind, did you?
Mine? Certainly not. I'm very impressed. As a matter of fact, do you mind if I look at your hands?
Look at it? What for?
Beautiful. As beautiful a pair of hands as I've ever seen. It occurs to me that you say that you don't know what you're going to do when you leave the hospital here.
Well, I just hadn't thought about it much. Why?
I've got a proposition that might possibly interest you.
No kidding. What?
Well, I'd rather not discuss it with you here and now, but I expect to be leaving here myself on Friday. If you'd like to come and see me sometime after
you
that...
You say where and when?
Well, I've been staying at a little cottage on Dr. Martin Trent's estate. I'll probably be going back there. How about Saturday night, late, around 11:30?
Fine. Okay with me.
Then it's a date. I left him there, hurried back to my room. I wanted to be alone. Had to be alone, for I was afraid that what was on my mind might show in my face. It certainly was a date. A date with death.
A man obsessed, half mad, and his unsuspecting victim. Will both of them still be alive to hear it when the clock strikes 12 for...
Murder! Midnight.
Yes, this tale very, very much like The Hands of Orlok. Not quite the same. Perhaps inspired by, but that was part one.
And there's a mystery theater much like that as well. But that will not be for this weekend, perhaps another hands-free weekend.
Yes. This guy's hands got freed up all right. Right off of him. Jeez. It's getting brutal.
Well, actually, I find out why the goat's not cooperating too much tonight, Dale. He's angry about the writer's strike. Because when the writers are writing, they always throw away a bunch of words and papers, and he eats that up. Well, he can't eat that up because, you know, there's a writer's strike going on.
Oh, for goodness sakes, the poor goat. Well, we can always put him to work in, somebody's yard, cleaning up.
Yeah.
Actually,
I don't know if he likes greens and vegetables. Is grass a vegetable? I don't know.
I don't know, but I'm proud to live in a country where a hard-working goat can get a job, you know? I mean, I think that's just a hard-working goat can get a job.
What more in life can you ask for?
I don't know. Maybe the conclusion of the show? That's something we could ask for.
Maybe. I don't know. Things are just running right along pretty quick tonight.
They are, but it always gives us the opportunity to just give them a little more love. We've always got a stash of goodies around.
We do. And right after this show, before we start our new program, Midnight, get the very highly researched that I made up to the story of Ugg the Caveman.
Yep. Yeah, I think Ugg's coming in right after this segment, no?
Yeah, I think so. Good time for him.
I think so. We'll get him out of his hiding place, and let's wrap up The Dead Hand from Murder at Midnight, but not really Midnight. Other time. Midnight.
Something like that.
And now, here is Roger Blaine to continue Murder at Midnight.
I did leave the hospital on Friday, went back to the little studio cottage. By Saturday night, my arrangements were completed. They weren't very complicated. I made it clear to Lorna and Martin that I wanted to be alone, and I picked up a length of iron pipe. The pipe I hid inside the piano when I heard footsteps coming down the path. There was a knock on the door. Come in.
Hi. Not too late, am I?
No, you're not too late.
Hey, pretty nice place you got here.
Yes, it is quite nice. Sit down.
Oh, thanks. Now, what's this here proposition you want to talk to me about?
It's a very simple one. How would you like to make $10,000?
What do I have to do?
You don't have to do anything. Just tell me something. You're left hand.
What? You're nuts.
No, I'm serious. I've got the money right here in cash.
I don't get it. I just don't understand.
Look, I'm a musician. I'm a pianist. Or I was until I lost my hand. If I can't go on playing, then life doesn't mean anything to me, my own life or anyone else's. But you, how important is your hand to you? Now, an artificial one will do almost as well. And you can live for quite a while on $10,000.
You mean you really thought I'd sell you my hand? Let you cut it off? I'm getting out of here.
Oh, wait.
Wait, nothing. I said you was nuts, but I didn't really think... Well, what are you going to do with that? No, don't. You can't. Some way. Somehow I'll get you for this. I swear.
I'm sorry, Hook. Very sorry. But I have to have it. I'd rather not go into what happened after that. I got rid of the body. And then I went to see Martin.
You don't look well, Roger. Anything the matter?
No, I just came to see you about your promise.
My promise?
Or your debt, whichever you choose to call it. I told you I wanted another hand, that I was going to get another hand, and that you were going to help me. Well, now you can help me.
What do you mean?
Look in here, in this package. See?
Good Lord. Where did you get this?
It might be better if you didn't ask too many questions. I'm fighting for my life, for more than my life.
You took my hand away from me. Well, now you can give me this one.
You mean you honestly, seriously think that I can perform an operation of this sort, do a graft, and that after I'm finished, you'll be able to use the hand?
Why not? Operations of this sort have been done, haven't they? With other parts of the body? The eye?
The cornea, not the eye. And some nerve grafting has been done. But this... Look, Roger, I know what a shock this whole thing has been to you. Know it better than you. You're not a well man.
A well man? I'm only half alive, and I'd rather be dead than go on living this way. But if I do die, I won't die alone. That's why I brought this along.
Roger!
Quick, easy, painless. If you won't do what I want, you die. And so does Lorna. Both of you, along with me.
You don't give me very much choice.
No.
All right. You win. Get me to the hospital.
Even before I became fully conscious, before I opened my eyes, I knew that it had been done, that it wasn't his hand anymore, but mine. Still, something wrong. I couldn't analyze what it was at first, but it was there. A feeling that something wasn't quite right. That perhaps it wasn't entirely my hand. I sat up. The hand was a mass of bandages, stiffened with splints. And inside the bandages...
Careful, Roger. Don't touch them.
Huh? Oh, Martin, I didn't see you.
I've been here with you ever since last night.
Last night? You mean I've been out that long, 24 hours?
It was very important that you keep quiet. You've been under sedation.
Oh, yes, of course. But this isn't the hospital.
No, I brought you home with me, back to the house.
Oh.
I thought it would be best for several reasons.
Oh, that's very smart, Martin. We don't want any questions, do we? Not yet. You did do it, didn't you?
What? Yes.
I knew you would and could. And it's going to work. It is working. I can feel it.
Please, Roger. You must be careful with that bandage. Hmm? You can't touch it, move it, disturb it in any way.
I won't, Martin. But I don't have to. I tell you, I can feel the fingers moving, even inside this. And in another week or so...
We'll see.
Yes. We'll see. Got a cigarette, Martin?
Of course, I have it right. That's funny.
Hmm? What is?
Well, my cigarette case. It was right here in my breast pocket. I must have left it downstairs at the hospital.
It doesn't matter. I can do it. But... Martin.
Yes?
I think... Here it is. Under my pillow.
What? How did it get there?
I don't know. It must have fallen out when you bent over. But... No.
Why are you looking like that?
Because... I think I know how it did get under my pillow.
What do you mean?
When fingers learn something, special skill, they don't forget it, ever. Mine never have. Even when I'm not thinking of what I'm doing, they go on playing by themselves. These fingers here, they haven't forgotten either. You understand?
I'm afraid
I... Forget it. I'm awfully tired all of a sudden, Martin. Would you mind?
No, Roger, I'd like you to get as much rest as possible. There's a friend of mine coming here tomorrow to see you. Another doctor.
That's fine, Martin. I'll see you in the morning. Yes, I was tired, but that wasn't why I asked Martin to go. I did it because I wanted to be alone, because I had to be alone. Because I knew now what it was that I'd only sensed before. The hand, Hook's hand, had a will of its own. It had picked Martin's pocket without my even being aware of it. I lay there alone in the darkness after Martin went, not touching the bandages, but flexing the fingers, forcing them to obey my will. I had to do that. I knew I had to do it because I suspected what might happen. And what did happen proved that I was right. I fell asleep finally. And while I was asleep, I dreamed. I dreamed I was walking down a dark, labyrinthine corridor somewhere under the earth. Then...
A little closer, Roger.
Huh?
Just a little closer.
Who's that?
Who's there?
Just me. Waiting for you.
Hook.
Yeah, Hook. I said I'd get you. No, well.
Out of the darkness came a hand that clutched me by the throat, gripped it tighter. 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 I fought against it. Tried to scream. And woke up. Yes, I woke up. And my waking was more horrible than the dream, for the hand was there, gripping me by the throat, moaning, exerting every ounce of my strength and will. I fought it off and pulled it down. I lay there, bathed in a cold sweat, staring at it, feeling the fingers quivering inside the bandages. My hand or his, I was tied to it now. Tied to a thing that was seeking to destroy me. Shaking convulsively, I leaped out of bed. I ran out into the hall and down the stairs to the living room. The piano. That was the one thing that might save me, save my reason. Seating myself at the piano, I started to play, using only my right hand at first. But I tried to force my left hand, his hand, to join in. Then suddenly...
No, Roger.
Go on.
That won't work. No music.
Stop it. Stop it. Do you hear it? It's my hand now. It's mine.
No, Roger. Never.
But it is. I'm stronger than you are.
Nothing is stronger than I am. Nothing in the world. And there's no escape. Because we're one now, Roger. And wherever you go, I'll be there, too.
It's not true. It's not. What are you doing?
Just a little closer to the desk, Roger.
No.
A little closer. That paper knife.
No, you can't.
But I can, Roger. I told you I'd get you somehow. Some way.
Oh, put it down. Drop
you. You can't fight against me, Roger. I told you. I'm too strong.
Martha! Martha! Quick! The hand safe! The hand!
Where is he, Martin?
The living room. I heard the piano and... Good Lord.
Roger!
He's dead.
But why? How? He was saying something about a hand.
He was in a completely psychotic state as a result of shock and a sense of guilt. The state psychiatrist was coming tomorrow to commit him.
Oh, Martin.
That hand he brought me, wanted me to graft on. I don't know where he got it, but I suspect that was behind the whole thing.
Behind it?
Yes.
Well, what do you mean?
You don't really think I did graft it on, do you?
Why?
He was desperate, and I had to do something to quiet him. I splinted his left wrist, wrapped it in bandages, and told him not to touch them.
Martin, that paper knife in his chest.
Which hand is holding it?
His right one, his good one.
Yes. And still, in a way, it's possible that the dead hand, the one he was so concerned about, did guide it.
Her eyes wide with awful comprehension, Lorna stares at her husband, then down at Roger Blaine's body as, somewhere in the silent house, a clock starts chiming for murder at midnight.
Lorna went on to make cookies.
Remember to be with us again when death stretches out his bony hand and the clocks strike 12 for murder at midnight. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight is directed by Anton M. Leader.
So it seemed...
at midnight. Sorry.
It seemed like it was going to have a supernatural end, but it did. It turned out not exactly.
Not exactly.
Not exactly.
Interesting story. Well, anyway.
Are we learning anything from this, or shall we go right into our historical friend?
I think we can learn a bit of history from our historical friend.
Let's do that then, and let's bring the man on. Eerie House Radio presents Ugg.
Go ahead. Okay, you did. All right. Back during caveman days, everything was new and life was very hard. The only thing that would make life easier would be to invent something that would make a task just a bit easier. And that's where we meet the world's greatest inventor of all time, Ugg, the caveman. Now, it's not that Ugg was smarter than the average bear, but he was smarter than most other cavemen. And not that those smarts would impress cavewomen. I mean, that's because cavewomen were impressed by the strong, burly cavemen, even if those cavemen didn't take a pond bath more than three times a year. And it's not that Ugg wasn't strong. Okay, Ugg wasn't very strong. When selecting a cavewoman for a date, he would conk the woman on the head four or five times with a stick before she finally got the idea and pretended to faint. But Ugg was never strong enough to pull her by the hair back to his cave, let alone carry her there. Thus, that caveman, Ugg, could never really improve his lot until he could learn to communicate. This would not only move cavemen towards a more civilized society, but also save many a cavewoman from getting a concussion. And a concussion could be a deadly thing back in caveman days, because the only known cure for concussion back then was to hold the cave person's head underwater until the concussion was cured or they grew gills. So not many would admit to ever having a concussion. That's when Ugg decided he had to create a safer greeting. Up until this point, the only way to greet someone was to throw a rock at them. Because this greeting was so vague, if Ugg was hit by a rock when he left his cave, he never knew if a warring cave clan were attacking or if his cave neighbor was just telling him good morning. Ugg had to come up with a better greeting for everyone to use. Now, the first greeting that Ugg invented was the fist bump. This did have two problems. The first was that many of the strong cavemen were not that coordinated and often missed the fist they were going to bump and would end up punching the other caveman in the stomach. The second problem was that the caveman had not yet learned not to have a rock in his hand when doing the missed fist bump and therefore causing many a caveman to have the wind knocked out of him. Ugg then decided to greet the cave person with an open hand to show that he had no rock. When the other cave dwellers saw this, he also extended his open hand to the other greeter, and to finalize the greeting, they would clasp their open hands closed around the other hand. Yes, Ugg had invented the handshake. The handshake would become perfected over the eons, especially by people who created Ponzi schemes and by politicians who would shake a man's hand, pat his baby on the head, and then smooch the man's wife. And remember that first fist bump that Ugg invented? It would be barely used, but it would become the new handshake during the great pandemic of 2020. So we owe a great deal of thanks to the greatest inventor of all time, Ugg the caveman, for the handshake and the fist bump. For without them today, we might get hit by a rock when all we wanted to know was what time it was. Thanks, Ugg.
Thank you, Ugg, for a better future and a better past. There's something.
Okay.
We're just damn grateful. We don't even know what for, but we're grateful.
We are grateful. And for ice cream. We're grateful for that.
Grateful for ice cream. Grateful for our listeners. Grateful for our partners. In slime. Yep. Ugg was the guy that invented Ugga Ugga Boo Ugga Boo Boo Ugga. Actually,
well, maybe
that
was
someone else.
It's a magic little password.
Yeah.
It'll help you if you're shy. Say, ugga-ugga-boo, ugga-boo-boo, ugga, ugga-ugga-boo, ugga-boo-boo, ugga. That will get you by. If you're in a conversation and you need a quick reply, say, ugga-ugga-boo, ugga-boo-boo, ugga, ugga-ugga-boo, ugga-boo-boo, ugga. That will get you by. Although the sound reminds you of a couple of lovey-dove birds, it's perfect when it finds you with your lips too busy for words. So be sure to keep it handy if the moon gets in your eye. Say, ugga-ugga-boo, ugga-boo-boo, ugga, ugga-ugga-boo, ugga-boo-boo, ugga. That will get you by. Traffic cop should pinch you, and you end
Woo-hoo.
Up in the jail. He will go your bail. If a burglar ever robs you, and he grabs off all your jack, say, he will give it back. Those words may sound peculiar when people don't know what they mean, but those words work like magic when you play a pinball machine. When you're flying in an airplane and the motor starts to thump, say, ugga-ugga-boo, ugga-boo-boo, ugga. Just before you jump.
Now, I stand corrected. Actually, Ugg did invent Ugga, Ugga Boo, Ugga Boo Boo, Ugga. Spike Jonze just did the remake. You know,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I got that clarified. So I apologize.
That's good.
Good old Bob, for challenging your comment. I was totally in error. Yep.
Hey, we have one more show to give.
We
I have a little background on it. It was simply called Midnight. And there were 13 episodes of the series made in 1982. It ran from July 13th to September 28th that year. It was an audio workshop production of the Society for the Preservation and Encouragement of Radio Drama, Variety, Adventure, and Comedy, or also known as SPURDVAC. The host was named Graves and was played by Bob Farley. He delivered sometimes corny lines with relish and obviously enjoyed the role. The actors didn't always sound professional, but then again, their love for the medium was apparent. This was, after all, a radio drama series made by hardcore fans of radio drama. The director, producer was Roger Rittner, and SPURDVAC still offers the shows through their general lending library. So there you go.
Ah. I remember Farley's younger brother, Chuck. Anyhow. God, that was a reach. Speaking of hands, this one's called Lasker's Hands from Midnight.
Yes. Interesting little story. And it comes to us from September 14th of 1982.
It's like yesterday.
Almost.
Yeah, or 40 years, I forget.
The sun has set. The darkness deepens, and the world awaits midnight. Once again, this is your host, Grave. Oh, it's good to be here. I nearly didn't make it to tonight's program. I was at the hairdresser's getting the latest perm. And the attendant forgot all about me. The curling machine nearly twisted my whole body into a pretzel. Now, I've been so scared that my toes have curled, but this was too much. When the girl came back, I was blowing smoke rings, and I wasn't smoking. Of course, she apologized, but I got back at her. I set her styling dryer on kill. Will her next customer get a surprise? But enough of tonsorial torture. Let's get on to tonight's story. A real ghost, one who frightens an old man out of his wits. After all, that's what ghosts are supposed to do. But then a young scientist gets into the act and spoils all the fun. Here's the first act of The Lasker's Hand.
Paranormal Research Institute. Dr. Bennett, just a moment.
Metaphysics section, Robert Bennett speaking.
Robert, this is your Aunt Elaine.
Aunt Elaine, how are you? How does it feel to be an American resident again? I've been meaning to call you, but I thought I'd let you get settled in first.
Yes, it takes a while to get used to things after being away so long.
How long was it? 20 years?
22, actually.
Oh, must be hard to readjust.
Oh, I'm doing all right, but your uncle, he's
having trouble?
Well, in a way. That's why I called you.
What's the problem? How can I help?
Well, I'm not really sure. He's worried about something. He doesn't sleep well, and he's agitated. But when I ask him about it, he won't tell me what's wrong.
Well, that doesn't sound like Uncle Joseph. He was always pretty open about things, especially with you.
Yes, and that's why I'm concerned. It's just been since we returned to America that he's begun acting this way.
That sounds like a readjustment problem. Why not call a psychologist?
Because somehow I don't feel a psychologist could do any good. Last week, in an off moment, Joseph said that his problem was something only you could understand.
Me?
Yes.
But I work with spiritualists, mediums.
That's what I said to Joseph. But he only said again, Robert would understand. That's all.
Uncle Joseph always discounted my work as ghost chasing.
Yes. But he was quite earnest when he made that remark last week.
Well, if it'll help, I'll come out and talk to him.
Oh, I was hoping you would. Could you come soon?
How's tomorrow?
Wonderful. Thank you, Robert.
No problem. You practically raised me when Mom and Dad were so ill. I owe you a lot.
We'll expect you tomorrow.
I'll bring along one of the other people from the Institute, Carolyn James. She's also a psychologist, just in case that is what Uncle Joseph needs.
Fine. Oh, and Robert?
Yes?
Don't be upset when you see Joseph. He's changed. Quite a bit.
Thanks for coming along, Carolyn.
Not at all, Robert. I need a little vacation from the lab. Although I didn't think we'd be coming this far out into the country.
Uncle Joseph and Aunt Elaine bought the house many years ago. When he decided to take on the hospital in Bombay, the rest of the family used the old mansion as a retreat on weekends. I haven't been there in almost 10 years.
Retreat is the right word. We've been driving for 2 hours.
Yeah, we're almost there.
How long was your uncle the resident at the hospital?
22 years. The Indian government hired him for 3 years. But he became so well-liked that they pleaded with him to stay. And he was glad to do it. He's a dedicated, conscientious doctor.
Oh, is that the house up ahead?
Yes.
It looks gloomy.
You're right. It does have a haunted look to it, doesn't it? Funny. I never thought of it that way before.
Thank you for coming, Robert.
Not at all. Aunt Elaine, this is an associate of mine, Carolyn James.
How do you do?
Hello. This is a very interesting house.
Thank you. Robert, before you go in to see your uncle, I must tell you something.
Yes?
Last night, he couldn't sleep. He said he was going downstairs to get something to read. But he was gone for nearly 20 minutes. And then I heard him cry out. I went downstairs and finally found him crumpled on the floor of the library.
What?
I helped him back to bed. I tried to get him to tell me what was wrong. But all he would say was, Robert will understand.
Well, let's go in and talk to him.
Joseph? Robert is here.
Hello, Robert. I'm so glad you came.
Robert, he looks so haggard.
Yes, he was always so healthy. It's good to have you back, Uncle Joseph.
I wish I could say it was good to be back, Robert, but it isn't.
Aunt Elaine said you thought I might be of help. So what is it?
Robert, I am haunted.
Oh, Joseph.
Yes. I tell you, I'm being visited by a ghost.
Uncle Joseph, you always thought ghosts were a figment of the imagination.
I know. And I thought your investigations were flights of fancy. But I know now you are right. There are such things as ghosts. And I am haunted by one. I've seen it.
Joseph, this is ridiculous.
Uncle, you've always been the most pragmatic man I know. You never believed in anything until you saw it for yourself.
Besides, ghosts, as most people believe them, really don't exist. We've been able to trace the evidence of spiritual manifestation, but no one has ever been able to see a spirit. At least no one we haven't been able to expose as a fraud.
But I have. I've seen this one every night for the past 3 weeks.
You didn't tell me that.
I didn't want to worry you, my dear. But I thought I could deal with it. But I soon realized it was beyond my powers to do anything about.
But not beyond mine. Is that what you thought?
Yes, Robert. I hope you can find a way to help me out of this.
But how?
I don't know. I only hope you'll be able to find a way to rid me of this apparition. During the day, I worry about my sanity. For at night, when this thing comes to haunt me, I suspect I shall soon go mad.
Well, we'll see what we can do. When does it appear?
On the stroke of 2 every night. It appears to me in the library.
Were you in the library the first time it appeared?
No. The first time I was in bed. I woke up suddenly and seemed to hear a wailing sound coming from downstairs. It almost seemed to be part of the wind outside. I thought I might have left a window open. So without waking Elaine, I went downstairs. All the windows were shut tight. But as I entered the library, the wailing became louder. And then the ghost took form in front of me.
This wailing, does it continue?
Yes. I tried to get it to speak, but it merely kept up its unearthly dirge.
How long did it continue?
I don't know. It might have been only a moment. But I was so frightened, so amazed, I thought it must have stayed for hours.
Did it do anything, or just stand there?
I remember it looked at me closely, almost as if it was making sure of my identity. And then it began to circle the room. When it came to some trunks in the corner, it stopped.
Stopped?
Almost as if it wanted me to open the trunks.
Did you?
No, I couldn't. I was riveted to the spot where I was standing.
What then?
It gave one last moan and then vanished.
Did it vanish while it was near a window or a door?
No. It was still standing at the trunks.
Any curtains nearby?
No. Why?
We once exposed a fake spiritualist by proving the ghost she manifested had actually disappeared behind some draperies in the room.
You don't think this is a fake?
I don't know. If it is, it really must be a good fake, if what you say is true.
It's true. Every word.
And it's appeared since then?
Every night at the stroke of 2. I hear the wail and come to the library, and there it is.
The same actions every time?
Yes. It appears, goes to the trunks, wails, and then disappears.
Obviously after something in the trunks.
Yes. Uncle, did you open the trunks after the first appearance?
Yes. I looked through all of them the next day.
What was in them?
Just some souvenirs of Bombay and some old relics and specimens from the hospital.
Did you put them back?
Yes. I had no place to display them.
Could be.
Yes. Uncle, if there is an apparition, we want to see it.
Yes.
Will it still come if you're in the room?
I don't know. But if it does, we'll be able to tell if it's real or if someone is playing an evil trick on you.
Who would want to play a trick on us?
I don't know. But we always assume a rational explanation for apparitions until we eliminate all possible logical explanations.
What do you want to do?
Carolyn and I will stay in the library tonight after you turn in. All you need to do is act as you have before. When you hear the wail, come into the library and stand where you always do when it appears.
Very well.
And what about me? It'd be best for you to stay in your room, Mrs. Bennett. We don't know what may happen if the spirit is confronted with more humans than necessary.
I don't know if I can wait up there while you're facing whatever it is.
Nevertheless, I agree with Carolyn. Wait upstairs.
Very well.
And Uncle Joseph?
Yes?
Keep your wits about you. If this is a real spirit, and it finds us spying on it...
Yes?
There's no telling what it may do.
Who knows what it'll do? I like the host for this show, Dave.
Yes, he very much take his cue from Raymond.
Raymond, very much so. EC Comics, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, he's pretty cool. He's pretty cool. This was a good find. Something that a show we've never played before, as mentioned, and that was a great discovery. And thanks for bursting that one on us tonight.
And much like WCRS radio stage, it was really just put together by people who just love radio dramas. So that's the thing that you think about when you're listening to this. These aren't professionals. These are all people who just pool their resources to come up with these 13 programs. And
hopefully we'll have more.
Oh, yes, we will. We will.
Good.
And the neat thing about this, too, is this isn't just a redone script or a redone story. This is a bit of an original story as well. So I really like this. I don't think I've ever heard any end quite like this one does. So I'm looking forward to everyone getting their chills at the end.
Oh, wetting our whistle for a thrilling ending, which is coming up. Might as well take care of it now, and we'll have plenty of time for more awesome radio fun as we wrap up Midnight, Lasker's Hand.
Is that you?
Yes, just trying to get comfortable.
It does get cramped behind these chairs, doesn't it?
What time is it?
Almost 2.
Lucky there's a moon tonight. There's enough light to see without turning on the lamp.
Yes, that would scare away a ghost.
Or someone pretending to be a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
We should would hurry. I'm about to...
There. 2:00. Now we'll see if our ghost will appear. Listen.
It's coming from the middle of the room. But there's nothing there. This is a trick. It's a good one.
I hear Uncle Joseph coming down the hall.
I'm here. Where are you?
Look!
It's taking form. In the middle of the room.
All I see is a robed figure. Can you see its face?
Yes, I see it. Or what seems to be a face. The features suggest an East Indian.
What do you want?
He's going toward the trunks.
But we emptied the trunks out before dinner and put everything in the cellar.
Apparently he doesn't realize that yet.
Yes, I understand.
What's your uncle doing?
I told him to open the trunks. If the ghost sees they're empty, maybe it'll leave.
sure it's looking inside.
Holy cow!
It's holding its arm straight up in the air, like it's going to strike your uncle.
Carolyn, look! Look at the right arm! It has no hands!
You're right! Just the stump of an arm, cut off at the wrist.
Wait, it isn't going to strike him. It's gesturing to the stump.
Look! It's pulling back the shroud over its face.
Yes, I see clearly now. Definitely Indian.
Your uncle, he's seen it too. He seems to recognize it.
Oh, no. No!
Your uncle fainted.
Come on, Carolyn. I want to get a closer look at that spirit.
It's leaving.
Quick, get between it and the door. I'll block the window.
Robert, it's dissolving.
Right in the middle of the room. It's gone.
Check the floor.
No need.
I guess not.
I have to admit it. If ever there was a real ghost, that was it. How's Uncle Joseph?
He's quiet. Now, will you tell me what happened?
It happened just as he said, Mrs. Bennett. The wail, the materialization, everything.
Except this time, Uncle seemed to realize who it was. That's why we've got to talk to him.
Yes, I think he wants to talk to you, too. But not too long. He needs rest.
You sound just like a nurse.
I was, for 37 years.
Uncle Joseph?
Robert? You saw it?
Yes, Uncle. It was a ghost.
I know. I know now it must have been.
What do you mean?
It was the Lascar.
Lascar?
An Indian sailor, usually of lowly birth.
Which Lascar, Joseph?
The one whose hand I amputated in 1963.
Oh, yes.
Tell us about it.
He was brought into the receiving room. His hand was badly mangled. Caught in a winch, they said. I tried vainly to save it, but it was no use. After 3 days, it was quite clear that it had to come off.
The poor man, he was terrified.
But not as terrified of the operation as what would happen when he died.
I don't understand. The Lascar explained that one of the tenets of his religion held that all parts of a body must be reunited after death in order to make a perfect dwelling for the spirit.
Yes, I've heard of that belief. The ancient Egyptians mummified their royalty for somewhat the same reason, didn't they?
Yes. Well, he wanted his severed hand to keep. I said it would be much safer in my care than his. I would preserve it carefully for him so that when he needed it again, it would be available.
That sounds almost comical.
Oh, it's gravely serious to the people of that religion, I'm sure.
Indeed. I stored the hand in a jar of formaldehyde and kept it on a high shelf. It may have been just a quirk, but I felt I owed it to the Lascar, who had trusted me so fervently with it.
So that must be what the ghost was looking for in the trunk.
Undoubtedly.
Except it wasn't there.
What?
No. A year before we returned to America, there was a fire in my laboratory at the hospital. Nothing very valuable was destroyed. But the bottle which contained the Lascar's hand fell from its shelf, broke open, and the hand was consumed in flame.
So it was no longer available for the Lascar when he died.
Which he obviously has done.
Then that means...
Yes.
What?
Without that hand to offer the ghost, you may be haunted forever.
Oh, no.
But can't anything be done?
I don't know, but I know where we might find out.
Where?
The Institute. There might be something in the research library that can help us.
How long will that take?
I'll run a search through the index computer. Maybe it can find some reference in the ancient literature files. It shouldn't take more than a day or two to find it, if it's there.
And if it isn't?
Don't worry, Mr. Bennett. We'll find something.
We'll have to.
Why?
If that ghost discovers his hand is destroyed, he might get very angry. He might do anything. Carolyn, here it is.
Did you find something?
Yes. I thought I remembered something like this. It's in the interpretation of the Thoth scrolls Dr. Lurens found in the Egyptian burial site in 1928. Listen. Earthbound spirits are often obsessed with retrieving personal possessions that have a strong emotional attachment. The offering of the object or a reasonable facsimile will often suffice to release the spirit from its earthly attachment and allow it to pass easily to the netherworld.
A reasonable facsimile?
Right.
Who are you calling?
Dr. Lansing, over at the hospital. He has lots of Indian patients. Maybe he can... Hello? Dr. Lansing, please. Thank you.
You don't mean that you're going to...
Yes. If we can obtain another hand, same race, and preferably the same sex, the ghost may accept it and leave Uncle Joseph alone.
Robert, that's ghoulish.
In a way. But if it works, what an exciting experiment we'll have concluded.
Hello?
Dr. Lansing? Robert Bennett at the Paranormal Research Institute.
Oh, hello, Robert. Oh, what can I do for you?
Doctor, this may sound a little like grave robbing, but I have need for a human hand.
What?
It's for a very important experiment, Doctor. It must be from an East Indian, preferably male, amputated directly at the wrist bone.
Well, that's one of the oddest requests I've ever had. And even odder, I happen to have a hand that might do.
You have?
Yes, took it off an Indian yesterday. It just got through biopsy, and we were about to cremate it.
Don't! Is it right or left?
Right.
Perfect! May I come over and get it?
I suppose. There's no chance of restoring it to the poor wretch who lost it. You'll have to sign the usual forms, of course.
Thank you, Doctor. We'll be right over. Lansing's got a hand. Let's get over there and... Bennett speaking.
Robert?
Aunt Elaine, what is it?
You've got to get out here quickly. The ghost was here again last night.
Yes?
And it almost killed your uncle.
What happened? How's Uncle Joseph?
He's resting. He said that when the ghost appeared to him last night, it was very angry. It started throwing things around the room and then attacked Joseph.
You were right, Robert. The ghost is becoming dangerous.
We've got to try the experiment tonight. It may be our last chance.
Experiment?
Robert found an old manuscript that said we could rid Mr. Bennett of the ghost if we provided a substitute hand. We got one from a hospital.
You think it will work?
It has to. It's our only chance. Should be here soon. It's almost 2. There. Good. Uncle Joseph will be down in a minute, carrying a hand. He'll offer it to the ghost and we'll see what happens.
There he is. And the ghost is materializing.
Here. Here is your hand. Take it and be gone from here.
He's looking at the hand closely.
Yes. I hope the substitute will do.
Look, the hand is growing faint. It's floating over to the ghost and attaching itself to the arm.
The ghost is accepting him. He's whole again.
It's worked. It's dematerializing.
I think we've done it. Elaine, that was delicious. Whoever thought of having curry for breakfast?
It was wonderful.
We had it often in Bombay. I guess customs die hard.
I'm glad they do.
Speaking of dying hard, I don't think you'll be bothered by that ghost again.
I'll admit, there must be something to your investigations, Robert. They certainly turn up information of practical value.
I'm glad we could help.
I'll get it.
And we did actually see an apparition we can document. That's worth nearly as much.
Robert? It's for you.
Me?
Yes, a Dr. Lansing.
Thank you. Hello, Dr. Lansing?
I'm sorry to bother you, Robert. The Institute gave me the number. There's something I think you should know.
What?
The hand you took.
What about it?
The fellow I took it from died this morning.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But as he was dying, he made mention of his religion... And that he must be whole to enter eternity.
What?
Yes, his last words were, "Where is my hand? Who took my hand?"
Robert may have his own ghost now.
What a thrill! Imagine having a nightmare every night, even when you're not asleep. That's enough to make you cut off your own hand. The Last Car's Hand was written and directed by Roger Rittner. Featured in the cast were Michael Vernon, Isabel Lee, Sandra Snow, and Art Dutch. Also heard were Glenn Shaddix, William Irwin, Virginia DiAria, and Bob Farley. Sound effects by David Surtees, with Mark Trella. Production assistance by Bonna Newman. Engineering by Gil Jones. Midnight is a Roger Rittner radio production. Now, until we meet again, this is your host, Graves, reminding you that wherever you are, it may not be midnight now, but it soon will be.
There you go, Midnight, a new to Erie House radio program.
And perhaps is something we may learn from this story, Dale.
Well, you know, it's just never too late to learn something new. Erie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
Yes, apologies to Gar. And this is a short one. Always be aware that if you lend somebody a hand, don't always expect that hand back. That's it.
Yes, especially if you're handing it to Dr. Frankenstein. Yes. Doc, Northwest Media joining us in the chat, along with Fogs being good old Bob, live here as we present these wonderful radio programs. And, yeah, he's from the good old Washington State area. Got an opportunity to share some more little treats with you tonight.
Yeah, a little bit of time there.
I recommend a wheel.
Well, okay. Is it your turn to pull the wheel?
I think I'd like to take a little break. I got a twinge in my spinning shoulder.
Oh, well, in that case, I will head up to the wheel, and as I reach way up to the top, I'll be careful, I don't want to get a cramp, and I grab it, and I give it a nice big tug.
Yeah, our insurance doesn't cover
cramps. Around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
But going from rhyme to reason, comes time now to bring on that well-informed man, Jimmy Durante, in person.
You've got to start off each day with a song.
Sing it, sing it, boy.
Now, even when things go wrong, why, you feel better, you even look better.
Oh, Jimmy, I'm surprised to see you here tonight.
Yesterday, I got on the fastest train from Los Angeles to San Francisco, the Lark.
Uh-huh.
And before you know it, I'm halfway to San Diego.
But that's the wrong direction, Jimmy. How come?
The Lark got interested in a swallow from Capistrano. But that is neither Atchison, Topeka, nor Santa Fe. I'll never forget my last trip to San Francisco. Boy, is that town foggy.
It is, huh?
I took my girl home one night, and I tried to steal a little kiss while standing in her doorway. For 20 minutes, we kissed in that foggy doorway. And when we finished necking, was I embarrassed.
Why?
Somebody shoved a quart of milk in my hand and said, "Never mind the 13 cents, lady. It was a pleasure." If I knew it was the milkman, I would have held out for cream.
James Schnozzle-Durante, taking girls home and kissing them in the doorway. Why, at your age, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
At my age, I ought to be proud.
Love is an international thing. So, with your San Francisco appearance in mind, I have written a special dramatic love scene.
Dramatic? Isn't that a little out of the vicinity of my precinct?
No. No, it isn't, Jimmy, because in this scene, you see, in this scene, you will play opposite none other than the glamorous, luscious Lauren Bacall.
Lauren Bacall? There's good news tonight.
You like Lauren Bacall, huh?
Like her? Now, there's a gal who's got this and that, dem and those, and if you don't see what you want, ask for it.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way, Jimmy, because, you see, in this scene, you and Lauren are seated in a canoe drifting lazily down some elfin stream. She in the bow, you in the stern.
She's in the bow of the canoe and I'm in the stern.
That's right.
You couldn't make that a rowboat and get his boat in the back seat.
No.
Or better yet, let's whip out all the seats and make it every man for himself.
Jimmy, will you listen to me as you sit there? You see, as you sit there in the stern of the canoe paddling along, she looks at you, James. Her eyes agleam with romance.
Go on, I love that kind of carrying on.
But she looks at you. She looks at you with your muscles rippling as you paddle along, and her eyes seem to say, come to me, Jimmy. Come to me, my love.
Is that what her eyes say?
That's what they say.
Then why don't I drop that silly paddle and come to her? You know, I can buy a new paddle for $1.50.
Never mind. Jimmy, will you listen to me? You don't want to come to her yet, because you know. You know that around the bend there's a clump of low-hanging willow trees. And you'll take the canoe beneath those trees, because you know that no one can see you there.
I do?
Sure.
I'm a stinker, ain't I? I'm going to hate myself in the morning.
Oh, suddenly, Jimmy, suddenly she can hold her silence no longer. She leans forward in the canoe, her lips parted in passion.
Oh, boy.
She holds out her arms ever so gently as if to say, I'm yours for the asking, James, my love. I'm yours from this moment on. And do you know what you do?
What?
You go right on paddling.
I see. Lauren Bacall's got her arms out, her lips are parted in passion, and I go right on paddling.
That's right.
Boy, I'm a sucker for a paddle, ain't I?
No, you're not. You're playing hard to get. After all, you're a city slicker.
City slicker? I'm the village idiot. That's what I am. Believe me, this ain't the way Humphrey Bogart plays it.
Jimmy, will you be quiet? At this moment, you see, at this moment, a strange feeling begins to creep over you. A feeling that you can't sit still for another moment. A feeling that you must rise to your feet.
It's those cane-bottom canoe seats. They'll do it every time. Guy gets up from them things looking like a Sunday morning waffle.
Jimmy, will you listen to me? The seats have nothing to do with it. You look forward, you see. You look forward at Lauren Bacall. Yes, James, and there she is in all her tempting abandon. And slowly you begin to inch your way forward, inch by inch.
Inch by inch?
Foot by foot.
Foot by foot.
Yard by yard.
Yard by yard.
Meter by meter.
Meter by... Get me up there, will you? I only rented this boat for an hour. Also, those three sailors waiting for this boat, they got plans, too.
Jimmy, calm yourself, will you? Calm yourself, because this is it. At this very moment, you're a scant matter of inches from a fingertip.
Oh, now you're talking.
By now, her eyes are brimming with tears, Jim. As you reach to take her hands in yours, a muffled sob breaks from her lips.
Go on.
But she's smiling, Jimmy, and you're smiling.
Go on.
The moment has come. You take her in your arms. You look down as she raises her lips.
Yes, and what happens?
That's funny. The next page seems to be missing.
The last page is missing. Mr. Moore, you ought to go see a doctor about your face.
What's wrong with my face?
Nothing. It just talks too much.
He's absolutely mortifying.
Oh, that's not where you want to lose the last page.
That's right. A little bit more time here, then we'll keep you up to date on what's going on. Let's drop a coin. Let me see. I think I got it here in the bottom of my pocket in the old Erie House jukebox.
You know, every great war produces its great hit songs. And after each war, we like to gather around the piano or the guitar and play these songs. We enjoy the songs because they remind us of how much we enjoyed the war. Now, World War III is almost upon us, as you know, by popular demand, it seems. And it occurred to me that if any songs are going to come out of World War III, we better start writing them now. So I have one here. This is a song that some of the boys will have sung to their mothers as they will have gone bravely off to World War III. There's one reference in here that I should explain. There's a reference to our leading television news commentators, Chet Huntley and David Brinkley. I feel that this is appropriate because, as you know, World War III will be the first world war to be seen on television. And I certainly hope that we all have color television by then.
So long, Mom, I'm off to drop the bomb, so don't wait up for me. But while you swelter down there in your shelter, you can watch me on your TV. While we're attacking frontally, watch Brinkley and Huntley describing contrapuntally the cities we have lost. No need for you to miss a minute of the agonizing Holocaust. Yeah! Little Johnny Jones, he was a U.S. pilot, and no shrinking violet was he. He was mighty proud when World War III was declared. He wasn't scared, no siree. And this is what he said on his way to Armageddon. So long, Mom, I'm off to drop the bomb, so don't wait up for me. But though I may roam, I'll come back to my home, although it may be a pile of debris. Remember, Mommy, I'm off to get a commie, so send me a salami and try to smile somehow. I'll look for you when the war is over, an hour and a half from now.
Amazing. The incredible Tom Lehrer.
Tom Lehrer. Yep. What an amazing... I can only listen to so much Tom Lehrer at a time. He has such an angry humor, I have to pull back. A few people are like that. Henry Morgan can be like that for me. It's not... I don't know. That's just kind of the way I gauge. I can only listen to just so much at a time. I love the stuff.
Yeah, so I know how you feel. There's some angry young men out there at times that can really, really get angry. No, you know what I mean. Socially, I know. Socially, I prefer to avoid angry people. It's just not something I see.
The best thing that can happen is they can make you angry. And that's not a good thing, you know?
Yeah, I'm not getting sucked into that game, if I can help it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just not where I'm going. I'm more into, hey, let's play some nice old-time radio programs and sound bites and stuff and have a grand old time.
Yes. And that's what we've been doing for so many episodes here on Erie House Radio.
Number Animal
350 babies. Of Erie House. Jeez.
Oh, yeah. It's number 350 of Erie House Oldie Timey Radio. It's what, 732 overall, I think.
That's what it says, yeah.
Well, then that could be right. Plus, our side job is, of course, tending animals. No. There's a goat around here. Yeah, there we go.
Yep.
Who knows? What
there
might
is,
even,
yeah.
One might even find a yodeling pickle, for all I know.
Yeah, one might find it. He felt he lost the yodel off last week, and he's a little embarrassed.
Well, my motto is, if you gotta have some Tom Lehrer, you gotta have some Stan Freberg.
Take five.
Okay.
Who listens to radio? That go where you go medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight, and in the morning with your toast and mama lady-o.
Yeah.
Who listens to radio?
No
matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall.
And a lot of them listen to Erie
that's
House.
It.
That's all I. That's all I'm going to say. 150
yep,
million.
Yep.
Some of them listen to Erie House. Tomorrow night, we're handing it over to CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Ooh, I like the title, "The Hand That Refused to Die." That's got to be fun. Tomorrow, 6:30 Eastern,
for the live show.
Or Erie yep. House Radio number 733, if you're looking it up in the archive. It'll be up there sometime tomorrow after the show is complete, and it has a chance to render in Blog Talk.
We have to do it first, Dale.
System. Huh?
We have to do it first, Dale, before they can listen to it in the archive.
True.
There's a catch to that, you know?
Yeah, well, we're still working on time travel. Next weekend's going to be fun. It's a split weekend. It's not a theme for the entire weekend. We'll explain that. Probably more so at the end of tomorrow's show.
You know, talking about things, they finally have given me what they promised in Mechanics Illustrated since the day I could pick up one of those things and look at it. The first flying car has been approved for testing by the FAA.
This is true now. This is a fact.
This is true. This is true.
Check this.
I got it off the Associated Press, yes.
Ah. Well, then who knows?
But, yes, they promised me this since the beginning of time, of my time, that we would all have flying cars by now. They're going to start producing them for consumption. It's only going to cost you $300,000 for a vehicle, Dale. $300,000.
That's a little cost prohibitive for me.
It's fully electric, and as a car, it drives a whole 25 miles an hour. But as a plane, it goes a little faster than that.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's a little bit too much money. $300,000 large? No.
$300,000 for a flying car. But you know what? Once they've been mass produced, they'll probably go down to at least $250,000.
And then, how long do they think my extension cord is if they're going to make this thing electric? I mean, come on.
I
might want to go farther than across the street if I'm going to get up in the air, for crying out loud.
Has vertical takeoff and everything. Yep. Yep.
And anyway, we'll see you tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern. Thanks for joining us tonight, folks.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And just him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Okay.
Can you dig it?
Sure, I got the shovel. I've been shoveling it for some time now.
Dang, I needed to keep my foot out of the door for that.
Oh, Dave, watch it. You could lose a toenail. That's
that hurts.
Yeah. That's up there with the other painful thing we discussed earlier.
Yeah.
Our pain show. Pain. Yeah, man. Speaking of which, aging, it gets to be so much fun. But
yeah, they're taking pre-orders for the car, Dale. You only have to put $150 down. Does this sound like a Ponzi scheme? That's what I want to know.
It could be. I wonder if they accept trade-ins. What do you give me for something that looks like Al Bundy's Dodge?
No, you say it was Al Bundy's Dodge. That's what you got to say.
That's how you get the premium money.
You get the premium money for calling it. That's right. Yeah.
Sounds like an Al Bundy scheme. Al Bundy,
yes,
kind of like
it does.
He's kind of like the coyote in the Warner Brothers cartoons. I mean, nothing good ever happens to him. And no matter what, he's
true.
Trying every day. Every day he's back, taking more punishment. Sometimes in cartoon-like fashion. I was dating my wife when that show came on.
Uh-huh.
And we were over at my house watching it, and I'm like, what the hell is this? These people all hate each other, but it's hilarious.
It is, yeah. It was, because that was a show that everybody was against everybody. The husband was against the wives. The parents were against the kids. The kids were against the parents. The brother was against the sister. The neighbors were against the neighbors. The men were against the women. The women were against the men. Everybody was against everybody.
And it brought us all together. Oh, jeez.
Yep.
Well, maybe not that so much, but I just thought it was a tremendous, clever show.
Yes.
With a good set of actors playing each role. Really, not one person was miscast, in my opinion. You know, each of the
characters. No. The only problem that often happens in shows like that is that the kids grew up.
Yeah.
And that took away a lot of the fun when the kids grew up.
Some of it. They were still like the leeches hanging around the house that he got to complain about.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. But that's the only problem with it, you know, and when the original neighbor left and she got Marcy got the toy boy, that was interesting.
Yeah, the guy from Happy Days. Ted.
Oh, that's right. He was from Happy Days. I'd forgotten where I'd seen him before. That's
He was, what was he, the older brother or something?
He was the one that came in when Ron Howard basically kind of left the show, except appearing every now and then. He's the one that came in to take some of the, kind of take his spot, but it wasn't because it just became hooked around Fonzie at that point, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All good things must come to an end, even Happy Days and Married with Children, sadly.
Yep.
I wept openly.
Well, and you know what? Actually, they could have gone on longer, but because they were playing so much, they were already syndicated before they were off the air. And
there was that,
to,
and I think there was tension rising between Marcy and Al, the real actor.
I don't think that's true, because when I heard him talk about it, he was saying that basically the stations were begging him to stop making more because they had all these out in syndication already. So I think it could have gone on longer, but it didn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they really didn't like each other, though. He would tease her about her lifestyle. And she got married to another woman. And she walked in on him talking to David Faustino, the one who played the son, And they were laughing. Right. What is the wedding cake? Can I have two girls? Oh, got real upset. And although she invited the Bud character, she did not invite Ed O'Neill to her wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ah. So he knew he struck a nerve, you know, or something. And, yeah, it's well documented by most. She's pretty cavalier about it, but which lends some credibility to her complaint, I guess, if he was being brutal about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah, I can understand that. Yeah. Did not realize that.
Yeah, they were not best of friends. I don't know if they ever buried the hatchet. They may have at some point. But
I think they did, but I couldn't tell you for sure. I thought I'd seen them together. But, you know, when they did the thing in Christine Applegate where she got her star on there, I'm not sure that he showed up. I know that David did she did, but I'm not sure Ed O'Neill showed up or not.
If he didn't, I'd have been surprised because I had always heard that those two got along well, Ed O'Neill and Christina Applegate.
Yeah.
Got along pretty well, so. Hollywood gossip on Erie House Radio After Party.
Yep, something like that.
It's all gossip as far as I'm concerned because I am trying to put in the caveat. I have heard, I have read. I don't know these to be facts.
Well, we weren't there. We didn't know.
Yeah, just something I heard. Gossip, gossip, gossip. Get yours now. No, a lot of fun tonight.
Yes.
And why do I feel like I'm missing another Hand movie like we were discussing a lot earlier? And I'm coming up empty.
Yeah. But, you know, it was interesting with the new show there. So.
Very. Oh, yes, we must have more of that, Dave. That was
good. There were 13 of them. So, you know, we do have 12 more to go, and all 13 are available. So,
oh, cool. Good to know. This
we will have more if nothing else for the host, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, the way they portrayed tonight's story, I felt, I don't know how your interpretation, Dave, but I felt that it was a kind of almost a timeless story. It wasn't necessarily set in any specific era of time.
It was right. It was not, and also really was of the three. It was really the most supernatural one.
Yeah, and you could mistake it for an old time radio show. Earlier period. Other than the quality was, you know, very very good. The sound quality, as we know, some of the old time radio programs are a little rough.
Yeah.
You know, Dave cleans these up for you, don't you, folks?
Yeah, we do clean them up a little, yes.
Dave
make them a little
them
cleaner.
Up.
And yep. Just to make it so that everything is
easier to
sounding
to.
As good as we can to present it, that's all.
Yeah. And yet, keep that old-time feel.
Yes.
Bravo, Dave, bravo. So here's wishing Gar the Ghoul a much speedier recovery than we've had him having so far.
I talked to him this week and he sounds so much better. He is feeling better and pretty soon he will. I think he will be making his appearance back with us and with his own show. Probably maybe with us even before he does his own show, just because it's easier to sit there and do the radio than to go through all that he goes through, you know, for that.
Yep. Yeah, Gar and I have been playing a little game of phone tag. And I'm not sure who's it anymore, but... Tag, you're it.
Yep,
but,
yep.
Who? Probably a good time to knock things off. Wish you a good evening. See you tomorrow for CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Or it's the next one in the archive after this one.
True. So with that, we turn off the house lights, turn on the three spotlights, so into the middle spotlight can walk the one, the only, Jimmy Durante.
Ha-cha-cha. Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night. Good night, Goldie.
Good night. What floor is this safe?
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Darn that pickle.
Sorry, fool, up we the same, and ink-a-dink-a-doo.
Good
night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Or whatever you are.
Ooh.